Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
The White Album is nearly 45 years old, but interest in one of the Beatles' most important artistic achievements, and in the group itself, remains rampant. One person who has paid special attention to what might have been the Beatles' greatest year, 1968, is Scott Freiman, a composer, sound designer, and musician in his own right, who lectures on the Beatles and their work. Freiman will bring his multimedia presentation, Looking Through a Glass Onion, Deconstructing the Beatles' White Album, to Amherst Cinema on April 4th for presentations at 4 and 7. Freiman was in Amherst in October for a similar presentation on Sgt. Pepper's and recently taught a course on the Fab Four at Yale. Scott Freiman, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what is there to deconstruct in this 30-track White Album? I mean, where do you start with something like that?
Well, that is a great question, and it was really a dilemma when I started to approach this album, because in other deconstructions, like Revolver and Sgt. Pepper, the Beatles were experimenting a lot in the studio. You can talk about effects. You can talk about all of the layering they did with the tracks. But these tracks for the White Album are fairly straightforward. The Beatles were returning to their acoustic roots, and they were getting rid of a lot of the production techniques they'd used over the past couple albums. So in looking at this album, you have to really take a look at the history and what came before it, how the Beatles got to this point where they were in the studio pretty much producing themselves. And we will be taking a look at early takes of these tracks, seeing how some of them evolved in the studio, seeing how a track like Revolution 9, so bizarre, but it comes from the original song Revolution of Lennon's, and how does that happen? What else is going on in the studio? What else is going on in the Beatles' lives at this time? And how did they come out with this really remarkable piece of work?
By this point, they had stopped being a touring band. So how much attention was paid to the technical side of being the Beatles and getting that caught, you know, on a recording?
Well, they had just come off this string of albums where they had been really exploiting the limits of the studio, really pushing things. And they were thinking that George Martin was getting a little too much credit, George Martin being their producer. And also, they were listening to Dylan's most recent albums and some other albums by more acoustic-based artists. And they were feeling that while everyone else was jumping on the psychedelic bandwagon, they wanted to get off. And so the production of this album was really based on getting a very good quality of sound with a very natural performance. Now, the hysterical thing about this is that sometimes it took them 100 takes to get that really natural, raw performance. So they were really pushing themselves in the studio. And George Martin was not as much a part of this album as he had been in the past by the Beatles' own choice. And so in a way, it was like the fox running the hen house. They would do things over and over again, and George Martin could only shake his head in disgust. But out of this, you know, there was this sense of trying to get the perfect track, trying to get something that captured them in a raw format without having to rely on all of the effects that they used on albums like Pepper and Revolver.
It sounds like it was a laborious process in some cases. How did they end up making a 30-song album? I mean, it's four sides, basically, a double album.
That's correct. And really what happened here is that George Harrison was coming into his own as a songwriter. So he was writing a lot of songs, many which didn't make the album. John and Paul were still writing an awful lot. They came back from their trip to India, which they had taken right before the album, and they had written many, many songs there and when they returned. And so they had this overabundance of material. And because there was really no one who could step in and say, guys, you know, we really need to cut this down, everyone's tracks got equal treatment. And I happen to think, as do many Beatles fans, that it's wonderful to go through these 30 tracks. You have all kinds of bizarre little tidbits in there. You have some great songs. You have hard rock, soft rock, country rock, avant-garde. You have everything in there. I think Martin would have preferred to cut it down to a single album. What tracks would have gone, we will not know.
This also marked the year when Yoko Ono entered the Beatles universe and stayed there. She's still there. How did that influence the process and the studio time that the Beatles spent with each other?
Well, Yoko was a very talented artist in her own right. She had had experience working with other musicians like Ornette Coleman and John Cage. She was a visual artist. She was a writer, poet. So when she came into the studio, unlike past girlfriends and wives of the Beatles, she felt that she had a valid opinion to offer. And the Beatles and the staff at Abbey Road were kind of incredulous to hear Yoko Ono make comments about these recordings and the sessions, because the Beatles really had not taken advice from anyone other than maybe George Martin. And here was this woman coming in, a new lover of John Lennon, and she was in there telling them what she liked and what she didn't like. And they were very hesitant to say anything to John, but certainly created a little bit of tension. And I think from her point of view, she felt she had a valid opinion. From John's point of view, you know, he was listening to her because they had a new relationship. And so her impact was felt from the very first recording, which was Revolution, and many places throughout the album.
You've made presentations on other Beatles albums. Where do you put the White Album in terms of creativity and value and just impact even today and looking at the whole Beatles start to finish?
Well, I try not to pick favorites. The Beatles albums are like my children. You know, I can't pick one that is a favorite, but each one has their own special characteristics. And I think what makes the White Album so exciting is this wide range of material, from silly songs to very serious, from hard rock, soft rock, as I said, all these different types of music, all these different genres. And artists from that point forward, from 1968 forward, have all looked to the White Album and grabbed something from it. You know, there are people who listen to Helter Skelter and it influenced them to help build heavy metal music. And you have roots of world music and country music and other things. Not that they didn't exist already, but for one artist to put all of these different styles in one album was quite unusual. And it really is also a kind of a part of the birth of the whole singer-songwriter movement. You have songs like Blackbird and Julia. John and Paul by themselves with a guitar.
You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life.
And pretty soon after that, you're going to have James Taylor and Carole King doing her solo stuff and so on and so forth. And really, this idea of having a solo artist, solo song, you know, you can trace it back to Yesterday, but there's a lot of that on the White Album. So very eclectic, all these different styles of music. The fact that you can put this material together and create a real journey through these different genres of music and these different styles, I think is something which is part of the legacy of the White Album, is that there are so many great songs on there and there's so many moods to take you through.
How important was the demoing process, and what do we learn about the way the songs ended up sounding from hearing their embryonic versions?
Well, when we will listen to some of the demos of the Beatles recordings that they did before the session, and you hear the roots of the song, and in many cases, you hear pretty much the whole song intact. At this stage of the game, the Beatles were pretty much coming into the studio with their song, each of their songs, and saying, here's how I want it done. And so there isn't a lot of additional instruments and effects and things like that, like there had been in the past. It's pretty much taking a very good song, a very strong song that exists nicely as a demo, and then rounding it out with the other voices and the other instruments of the Beatles. And that is something that really shows what great songwriters they were. So hearing some of these songs that became electrified on the album, hearing them in their roots, hear them before there's some orchestration or some additions, some minor additions in the studio, it's quite nice to see how developed these songs were before they got into the studio.
Obviously, you're a Beatles fan. I wonder, this work and these presentations and the research that all goes into putting on a show like this, has that changed the way you listen to the music and your enjoyment of the White Album or other Beatles work, knowing as much as you do about how it was conceived and what the process was like and all of the steps involved?
Absolutely. I think that for me, taking apart the tracks, learning what makes them tick, learning about what went into the composition and production gives you a new appreciation for the works. I remember in college doing it with Mozart and Beethoven. I've done it with jazz. I always love to do that. I think it gives you a much better appreciation. And what I have people saying after my talks is I'm never going to listen to music the same way again, because it really does make you appreciate the work that goes into producing a song that we're listening to 50 years later. And how does that happen? It's not just something that's luck. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And I think we can learn a lot from the craft of songwriting and production.
You know, here we are, 2013, still talking about the Beatles and their work. I wonder, what's the makeup of the crowd who comes to these presentations? And do you think people will be talking about the White Album in maybe another 45 years?
Well, the makeup is incredible, because I just did a presentation this past weekend. I had 7- and 8-year-old kids in the audience who were shouting out answers to my opening quiz, and getting more songs right than their parents were. So we get young children, college students. I get people in their 80s and 90s, some of whom missed the Beatles first time around and are still curious about what all the fuss was about. And of course, I get lots of baby boomers and people who grew up with the Beatles. That is really unusual. People ask me, what other deconstructions could I do? You know, the Beach Boys or Hendrix or Pink Floyd or Michael Jackson. It's very hard to think of a group or an artist that could get this range of ages in a single room, everyone enjoying the same music, coming at it maybe with different history, but all knowing the songs very well. And so when I do a show on the White Album or Pepper or anything else, you know, people are coming in with some relationship to the music. It may be a collection of random songs on their iPod, or it may be an album that they remember buying in 1968. And all of them gain something from these talks because, as I said, we're going into a little bit of detail about how these tracks were made, playing a lot of rare outtakes, showing some videos, and now when you listen to the track again, you get a whole new appreciation for everything. So it's really nice to have this wide range of ages come to the shows, and I do think, based on the questions I get, based on the response of the audiences, that the Beatles will have a very long life. I think they're part of the musical canon, if you will, and whereas a lot of the other artists of the 60s may fade away over time, I don't think the Beatles ever will.
Scott Freiman brings his show Looking Through a Glass Onion, Deconstructing the Beatles' White Album, to Amherst Cinema in Amherst, Massachusetts, coming up Thursday, April 4th at 4 and 7 p.m. Scott, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you about the White Album, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.